Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
What if Purdue and Illinois met up and Cornfield United? They could be a pretty good program.
Cornfield United.
Pete Thamel.
God, do I hate agreeing with Pat so much. Bet the opposite of us. Just start loading up on the opposite of us.
And SI's Pat 40.
And you get a 12-team playoff. I think that would be the most fun part of it at all, is a bigger playoff.
And here's Dan.
Welcome to the pod as we get close to July 4th weekend. Hope everyone has a safe and healthy time and fun time. I want to commend you, Pat 40.
Really?
Yes. I know this is rare. Don't worry. It's not a trick. It's not a setup. I commend you for your work at Sports Illustrated and SI.com, where you rearranged the FBS and called it the 40 Bowl Division. The 40 Bowl Subdivision. I'm sorry.
Yep. New FBS.
You broke up all the conferences, realigned all the teams, relegated 11 of them, promoted one, and did everything on geography, which is a tremendous off-season topic, evergreen, and allows us to tape this podcast earlier in this week.
There you go.
So we can all go fishing and golfing and whatever else we're doing.
There's the true benefit. There it is.
There you go.
And he showed classic 40 humility by naming it after himself.
Himself. That's right. Hey,
all those columns, 40 yard FBS. Dash, 40 FBS. Minutes. Yeah. The FBS. Pat, if you haven't read it, go read it. It's fun. If you're a college football fan and you're listening to this podcast, I assume you are, unless you just really like the People's Court.
You should like that too.
It commemorates the 10-year anniversary of the start of realignment by realigning everything. And this is always like a parlor game of everyone just blowing things up. So he creates 120 schools. 11 current FBS members have been sent down to FCS. Against all odds, it does not include my alma mater, UMass.
And I tried to find a way, but I stayed true to my formula.
Unfortunate for these schools, and I'm sure you got a lot of hate mail. I'm dying to hear about this.
Yeah.
UTEP, my man, the Miners. Come on. Best. That's one of the best stadiums in college football right there. The Sun Bowl is fantastic. Yeah. Not happy with you on that one. Texas State, UTSA, South Alabama, Louisiana Monroe, Bowling Green. They got their Bowling Green's got their stadium in the breakdown lane of I-75. Like, that's a great New Mexico State, no love for the Southwest. San Jose State, Coastal Carolina, Troy, and Liberty were all sent down. And North Dakota State, you bumped up.
Yep.
And moving, you failed to go with my plan of combining UConn and UMass into New England United. But anyway, you have 120 teams. You create 10 leagues with 12 members each, trying to do it in proximity. Notre Dame is forced into a conference. You play a round robin of 11 teams, and then everyone gets one non-conference, and then all 10 get an automatic bid. So just there's no way to do this like on a podcast, but if the Great Mideast Conference has this smorgasbord of teams, so you might say, okay, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Purdue, okay, it's making sense. Indiana, Akron, Kent State, what is that one? The Ball State logo, Cincinnati, Miami, Ohio, and Toledo are in there. So you're just basically mashing up.
Cincinnati, right.
Mm-hmm. So MAC teams are getting elevated. The Big Ten's getting split. Same thing in the SEC, different stuff. And you're trying to keep some teams together or something. I mean, the Great Mideast is a lot tougher than the Great Midwest, which has Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, Iowa State, Kansas State, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota State. What's that? Western Michigan and Wisconsin. Well, that's not fair. Anyway, this is your policy. It's got all sorts of crap in here.
There's a lot of crap.
It must have clicked like crazy.
There's a lot of crap.
Ringing endorsement from Dan Wetzel.
I love it. I love it. I can start arguing points, but I want to hear what you have to say. What is your... What has happened since you sent this thing out early in the week?
All right, since I sent this thing out on Monday, it's been interesting. The response, if you are a fan of a Group of Five school, you're like, hey, this is awesome, man. We're finally in a league with those guys, the arrogant, snotty, big-time Power Five school that won't play us. Now we're going to be in a league with them. Georgia's got to go to Georgia Southern. Florida's got to go to Florida Atlantic, you know, et cetera. Akron gets Ohio State to come to them. So they're like, yeah, this is pretty cool. East Carolina's like, wow, we didn't get relegated. Hey, that's great. And then the others, if you are like the two schools of the people that seem to be the most like, this is stupid, are Georgia and Florida, because they don't want to play all those other schools in their states. I mean, Florida, it's like, all right, yeah, we want to play Florida State. We'll play Miami sometimes, but we do not want to play UCF unless it's on our terms. We don't want to play USF. We sure don't want to play Florida Atlantic and Florida International. Well, in this situation, you would have to. So they don't like it at all. Notre Dame people, like, you can't make us go in a conference. No, I can't. But in this precept, you can. Exactly what you said. It's the middle of the summer, spitball. What if we just blew the whole thing up and just did it again? One of the things that got me thinking about this was going back to talking to commissioners and ADs and stuff, you know, a month ago, a month and a half ago about, hey, we need to be more regional in our scheduling and even maybe, realign to be more regional in terms of our conference affiliation. Well, this is hyper regional. It is really close by. And if you are worried about student athletes going to play a Thursday night game, you know, halfway across the country because your conference says so, well, you're not going halfway across the country in this. So your student athletes are missing less time. You're spending less money. You have most of your longtime rivalries are protected in this one way or the other. Not all, but most. And you get a 12-team playoff. I think that would be the most fun part of it at all, is a bigger playoff and 10 automatic bids, two net, two at large, put them all together, play on conference or on campus sites, and you get a whole new deal. So, you know, what the heck? It'll get us through a month or a week in the middle of the summer. Give us something to talk about. I did it all for us, for the podcast.
Let me step in before I let you go, Pete. I do find when you do these types of columns, the funniest response is people going, this wouldn't work.
No kidding. No kidding, really.
Absolutely no one thinks this would work. Yeah, no one thinks the Big Ten. Wait a minute. The Big Ten's not going to break up. No kidding.
Right.
Okay, yeah. We got you. Relax.
We're pretty
there,
sure.
Mister.
Yeah, the Big Ten and the SEC aren't saying, okay.
Is there a worse thing than a tweet that begins, but actually? No, yeah, we know. Okay, it's just something fun. All right, go ahead.
Well, the most fun part is people taking hypothetical columns like Pat's and taking them personally, cutting to the core. So at about 11 o'clock this morning, I got a call from a Louisiana Monroe staff member who said you were being vilified on their group text for leaving him behind. How dare you, Pat Forty? Your name is dirt in Monroe. You may never step foot there again. Actually happened.
Good dirt in Monroe. Good dirt down there.
Yeah, good dirt. No, I've been to Monroe. Yeah, good dirt. I am never going back to Monroe. I have been, and I am never going back. Pullman might actually be better. But I did, while we were taping this, get a text from an AD from a relegated school. Not pleased to be relegated. So people are taking it at least a little bit seriously, which is a little alarming.
You have a lot of fans at Liberty, Pat. I'm sure they're taking it well.
Yeah.
I'm not happy with this UTEP decision. What do you got against UTEP?
UTEP is terrible in everything. That was the problem. I start looking this up, and okay, let me explain the formula for who got relegated and who got brought kept in. I took a five-year average of the Sagarin ratings for football, and UTEP is the absolute worst in that time. I took your Dan's favorite metric, the U.S. News and World Report academic rankings, and then I took the 2018-19 All-Sports Learfield Cup rankings. I would have done 2019-20, but they didn't finish that because we didn't finish college sports. And so I just combined those, and wherever you rank, that's the number. And so UTEP wasn't even close. I'm sorry. Sun Bowl, very nice. Not even close.
What about burritos?
Breakfast tacos?
I failed to factor those in. I will admit.
Well, that's the flaw. I see the flaw. Because a great lunch spot El Paso's got like the best food.
Oh, I'm a big Mexican food fan, and I would be happy to eat in El Paso.
I think this is the situation. You have the wrong. You put in garbage in, garbage out, Pat.
I think the Bowling Green noise will only rise here.
We'll see. I haven't heard from them too much.
Bowling Green and not Akron.
The Troy people are very mad. Troy people are not happy.
Both of them?
What do you got against Bowling
Green? My dealings with Troy have been fantastic. But in this instance, they're less than thrilled with me. I will say, I will admit, like, this was strict accounting except for like one or two schools in or out based on, can I make this work geographically? It's like, this is like a giant Jenga game, you know, where like you take one thing out and the whole thing falls apart. So Troy might have been an unfortunate victim of that. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look and see who was victimized by that and who wasn't.
Yeah, please. Your Sunbelt math is of the utmost concern to our listeners. Could you please provide receipts? Because I really think people are going to dial in on your self-made mathematical Sagarin U.S. News World Report non-burrito formula.
You may be surprised. Yeah.
Quality of lunch spot should really be a factor, I think.
Quality of lunch spot, quality of campus bar. I mean, those are legitimate factors, you know, if you want to get into it.
Well, maybe get back to work.
The great Mideast is not that much harder than the great Midwest unless you think Michigan's actually good. It's got Ohio State, which would win either conference all the time. But if you think Michigan's really good, then okay. It's football. We're just talking football here.
Okay. But you think Michigan, Wisconsin's better than Michigan, but then what's second in the great Midwest? Minnesota?
Hey, won a New Year's Day bowl last year, won what, 11 games or something?
They won 11 games on this. Yeah. Look, if this was to ever take place, and obviously it won't, but it would be interesting. But, you know, really it'd just be about getting to the playoff.
Yeah, so exactly. That's the thing. And so that, you know, hey, there's a lot of places your chances just went up appreciably of making the playoff because there's now 12 spots in it. And like Penn State's no longer in the same division or even the same conference as Ohio State is.
Right. And there's a lot of ridiculousness already. So you sit there and go, well, this is garbage. I don't want to play Central Michigan. And I don't want to play. Well, you already play three bad non-conference games and three teams. The good teams are already playing 6-7 games. So you just set it up a little different. I like that. A little more balance.
Yeah.
And look, hey, if Michigan and Ohio State got to go through each other, I'm not sure, like, how much would it hurt recruiting? I'm wondering what schools would do so much better. Like, I actually think the Deep South, which just dominates Georgia and Florida, those schools would get much better than, like, you know, an Ohio State that is limited to Indiana, playing in Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan.
Yeah.
That's a tougher sell. Not that the Buckeyes are going everywhere, but like some of these schools, man, no one's playing in the Deep South. Although you do have your one non-conference game. I have to look in what you came up with those teams. But like
Florida State's playing Clemson, and Florida is playing LSU. Georgia plays Auburn. Georgia Tech plays North Carolina. Miami plays maybe Pittsburgh or something. I'm not sure. So. But yeah, no, I mean, there are many flaws in this thing, and that is one of them, is that a lot of, you know, Alabama doesn't get to go play in the state of Florida, which, you know, not that they play there that often anyway, but they'll go to Orlando or something like that, you know, and play that neutral site game.
I hope all those 10 schools you relegated, people use it against them in recruiting.
Yeah.
They're going to get left behind. You can't go to Troy. You got to go to Louisiana Monroe. No, Louisiana Lafayette. Or the artist formerly known as Louisiana Lafayette, which is now Louisiana.
If I wanted to be, you know, like if we wanted to be really ruthlessly utilitarian about it, I relegate like 30 teams and we go down to 100. The math works better for 10 leagues of 12 schools.
If you Google Pat's email address and you find one with an AOL in it, that's the right one.
Oh.
Hey, now.
Do you have any other complaints?
I, Do I have any other complaints?
No,
have I
got just Pete.
Oh, Pete.
I want to give the floor to Pete to complain and pick this thing apart.
Well, I mean, again, it's hard to pick apart something that's hypothetical and not going to happen. I secretly really like the Yankee conference, you know, from my Northeast chair. Like, that's probably what should have happened. And if a few things had happened differently with, like, the Big East and such, you know, I think I here's the complaint, Dan. And
read off the teams in the Yankee conference.
Yankee conference. Not everyone. Yeah, good point. Penn State, everyone has read this. Navy, Syracuse, BC, Maryland, Pittsburgh, Army, Temple, Rutgers, Buffalo, UConn, Massachusetts. Now, I think we need to discuss the possibility of the great Dan Wetzel plan, which deserves his name being used in it, of combining UConn and UMass.
That would
New England United. New England United.
It would certainly help out both schools and anybody who cares about either school's football teams. I'd be happy to have that. That way, you know what? Then we can bring back one more school, too.
This is how it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that if you were setting it up, this makes a lot more sense. You know, like, for the most part, the AFC East is in the, well, because it's got Miami. But, you know, that's the AFC North, NFC North is Minnesota, Green Bay, Chicago, Detroit. There you go. That's your league.
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't really worry about it. There's divisional rivals in pro football, but it's not as big of a deal as if there's a, you know, Ohio State's going to storm through this thing mostly and worry about Michigan. But mainly they're eyeballing, you know, who we get in the first round.
No, and that's the thing. That's, if you could possibly untangle everything and start over, this is what you would do, you know, because it is so much more reasonably sensible. But there's just no way to take, you know, the SEC isn't giving away every advantage they have, and neither's the Big Ten, and so on and so forth. So they ain't going for it.
What's the hardest league, Pat?
I thought, let me see here. Let me call them up. I've actually.
The Pac-12 is kind of the Pac-12. I mean, that's.
Yeah. The Pac-12 is close to the Pac-12, just like Hawaii. And that was one where, like, San Jose State should have been in there, but somebody had to go from the West. So San Jose State's out. The Sun Belt is probably the hardest league. LSU, Auburn, Alabama, right there. I mean, that's three killers that are already in this one division together. But then you keep also Mississippi State, Arkansas, Mississippi. You add Memphis, good program. That at least the top of that is pretty tough. Florida, Georgia, Florida State.
South,
when Florida,
right?
State's, yeah. Yeah. When Florida State's doing what they should be doing, that's a difficult one. The easy ones, like Clemson should win the Mid-Atlantic every year. You know, as things stand now, Penn State should win the Yankee. Ohio State should continue to win the great Mideast unless Michigan gets itself together. The most even one, I think, is maybe the Rocky Mountain Conference, but it's also the weakest one. It's like Arizona State, BYU, Utah, Air Force, Colorado, Arizona, Boise State.
So basically some of these schools that already win their conference every year
would continue to win their conference every year.
Penn State is absolutely going to roll through this league.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah. Yeah, that one, I put that together. I was like, geez, who's going to challenge them? And didn't come up with much. So
New England United is. All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
Okay, to actual conferences, including the big one, the Big Ten. 14 teams, of course. But they're the Big Ten. Big 12's only got 10. The 12, one of the things. We've been doing this. We did Big 12 earlier in the week. We've done ACC. We've done Pac-12. Go look back and find them if you want to hear about those. We'll do SEC. We'll come out next week. And this one, the Big Ten. General health of the conference right now. I think it's pretty damn healthy, but maybe you guys have different opinions. Pete?
So I would think, you know, Ohio State is operating on a really, really high plane right now, as high of a plane as it's operated on in its, century plus of football history. And, you know, right behind them is Penn State. Michigan's not all that far behind them. And then you have Wisconsin sort of operating in a similar sphere as those schools. And then there in Minnesota, I would give credit to, they have sort of risen into that conversation, and it's pretty muddled from there. So I would say the league is a bit top heavy. There was like a little flurry last year of like the West is so wide open and fun, and it just kind of turned out that the West wasn't very good. We'll see if the West can acquit itself a little better. Northwestern just did an all-time tanker. I think Illinois will be bad again. But overall health of the league, they're the best off financially. They have the network. They have a new commissioner. You know, some of the strongest ADs in the country are in that league, starting with Gene Smith at Ohio State. You know, certainly they're poised to lose a bunch of money if there aren't fans or many fans in the stands this year. But I think overall, health-wise, it's hard to pick a lot of holes in the Big Ten and in where it is right now.
Not many. It's incredibly profitable. You start with that. They are making more money than anybody else. I think it was $55 million per school last year. Just some, you know, phenomenal number. They've got humongous stadium. The Powers teams have humongous stadiums that they still fill or come very close to filling. Everything is very healthy. There's a couple exceptions. One, Ohio State national title in 2014. It's the only national title the conference has won since 2002. It's one school, basically. If Ohio State ain't going to compete for a national title, who is? Maybe Penn State can, but Penn State's got to get past Ohio State to compete for that national title. And they haven't been able to do that. Michigan, as we have said many times on this podcast, good enough to beat the bad teams, not good enough to beat the good teams. In the West, Wisconsin's probably maximizing their potential as a program as well as almost anybody in the country. Minnesota, right now with PJ Fleck, very much on an uptick. Think Purdue's going to bounce back this year and be better. They're probably not going to contend to win to the division, but they're going to be better. They were just ravaged by injuries last year. So Ohio State, a little bit like we talked about with the Big 12. Ohio State is here. Everybody else has dropped down a significant notch, and nobody else is competing for a title. Ohio State didn't win titles either. Now, you could argue that maybe they would have given LSU a little better game last year, but I don't think they would have beaten LSU. One national title in 18 years. Okay. It's a good conference. It's probably the second best conference overall, but there's still a pretty big gap between the Big Ten and the SEC.
All right. So my question was a little bit more on the stability of the league and things like that was what I was going for when I said pretty good. Okay. I agree with all you guys football-wise. Good, but could be better. Ohio State, obviously, it's really not competitive right now. The only times they really lose is when they don't pay any attention, which they used to do sometimes under Urban Meyer. Their recruiting is a whole different level. I was talking to someone recently about Midwest recruiting, and it was like it's basically Ohio State and then Michigan, Penn State, and Notre Dame fight for recruits. And then if Ohio, and occasionally one of those schools can beat Ohio. They can each beat them one or two out of 10 times. But for the most part, Ohio State's just at a different level in recruiting. And then if you watch a lot of the commitments, it's like, okay, he's choosing between Penn State, Notre Dame, Michigan. It's some linebacker from Toledo or something like that. And it's which one's he going to pick, or the suburbs of Chicago or Detroit? It's a whole different level. I know Notre Dame's not in the Big Ten, but close enough. I thought last year was a big breakthrough year in that, but it was a sign of progress that they at least competed, not only competed, but could have beaten Clemson. Because, you know, they had lost 30 to zip or 33 to zip. Clemson earlier a couple years ago. Michigan State made the playoffs, got absolutely shut out by Alabama, just trucked. And it was really like, man, you got the Big Ten's not even offering up. Then they didn't make the playoff a few times. Like they were not even a contender. I mean, at least Oklahoma puts points up. It just looked like the Midwest. Urban Meyer changed Ohio State to a whole different plane. Nobody else has been able to catch up to that plane. Can they get there? And that is going to be the challenge for Michigan and Wisconsin and some of the other schools that, and obviously Penn State, that have that potential, but haven't reached it so far. Other than that, a lot of solid teams. Obviously got a few weak ones. The Rutgers experiment has really just been, I know it was done for TV and TV money, but at some point that's just a kind of a joke and remains one. We'll see if Schiano can. I mean, you look at Schiano and you're like, okay, maybe he makes some, like, what's respectable? Like, what would be an accomplishment there? You know,
that's a 3-year grind to get into 6-6.
Yeah. Yeah. 2-6 in the league, 3-5 in conference play. Like, not bad. right? So they go 3-3, 3-1 out of conference, and 3-3, 3-5, and you're like, hey, pretty good job. So you just you have that bit, but that's one way the teams need. You need bad teams to have great teams. That's not unusual. And so that's really the question in terms of the health. It's where you're getting players, you know, population trends, importance of football, things like that do not favor the Midwest. You know, one of the things that expansion did was kind of open up the window to New Jersey and Maryland, and certainly the you know, the DC, Maryland, that whole area, it's got a lot of players to try to help. But you know, overall, there's more players in the South than in the North, and you got to find a way to get kids to leave the South to come play in the Midwest. You're recruiting on someone else's turf, and then you can't always keep it. Kentucky's been killing it up North. Alabama comes up North. I think one of the best linemen, one of the best linemen in the area, Garrett Dillinger, I think, Dillinger from Clarkston, Michigan. I wasn't quite prepared. His final four were Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State. And this kid looks exactly like the kind of lineman that has pushed kids around for those schools forever. He just chose LSU. And in his statement on why, he said, I don't want to watch Alabama and Auburn and Florida. I want to play against them. And so the SEC's pull in the North is pretty good right now. And that doesn't help. Now, I'm sure more kids come from South to North because they have to, but I think that's the issue. And then I think the other real challenge for this league is what is Nebraska? What, you know, Nebraska, can Nebraska ever get really good again? And I don't know. I've said this. We've talked about it on this pod before. I don't know. I thought Nebraska was in much better competitive shape in the Big 12, where they're playing all the time in Texas, and they had an identity and they had a history, and the competition was a little less than they are in the Big 10. They jumped to the Big 10. They got money, but they're just another school with a big stadium roaming around the Midwest looking for players, and they've got tons of those. In, you know, so you sit there and say, why go to Nebraska if you go to Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Notre Dame's in the area, obviously. Again, not in the league, but whatever. They're a force at all times around there. It's just a hard go. Iowa's got a better program than Nebraska right now. Can Nebraska ever get great? Because you brought them in to be great, but what you got is a program that doesn't have those advantages that it once had, and I think is wandering about and not really helping the conference in the way that it was designed. So
yeah, what you got a program that's basically on par with Indiana or Illinois, just with more fans. That's it. They want to be good. The fans really want it. They've got the passion for it, but they don't have the players. They haven't had the leadership, and that does hurt the West division, you know, is not having Nebraska just massively, I don't want to say underachieve, because they may actually be achieving about where they should be, but compared to where they were, they are not doing what the Big Ten hoped they would be doing.
Nebraska will be fascinating this year because they open with Purdue at home, assuming everything goes the way it should and is scheduled. Then they have Central and South Dakota State, which they should win. The big test for Nebraska, and I think it'll be a real pivot for Scott Frost's tenure there, will be Cincinnati in week four. Cincinnati, I would think, as of right now, would be favored in that game. All right, Cincinnati is going to be a top 25 team at very least going into the season. They're coming up back-to-back 10-win seasons. They're loaded this year. They return a ton. This is the season kind of Luke Fickle's pointed to there. If Nebraska loses to Cincinnati, then they have a couple of your sort of flotsam and jetsam games. They go to Northwestern, they get Illinois, they go to Rutgers. How about this closing kick for Nebraska if you want the Frost narrative to change really fast? All right. At Ohio State, Halloween. Penn State home, November 7th. At Iowa, November 14th. At Wisconsin, November 21st. Home, Minnesota, November 27th. Count any wins in those five games for the old Huskers?
L.
Yeah.
I mean, your best shot's Minnesota, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And you are going to be beat to a pulp at that point.
Right.
That's the problem. I just, like, where do they, I remember saying this at the beginning, where are you getting players?
Yep.
You know, they bailed. If they had stayed in the Big 12, like they ran and they had reason to fear the Big 12 was going to fall apart. And the Big 10 comes in with its golden ticket. But, you know, and fans will defend it and all that. Look at how much money. Look at how great our weight. Like, that doesn't buy you win. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. You want to win games.
Right. That's the thing. And that's where fans, as we've said before, it doesn't make sense for fans to root for profit margin. That's immaterial. Should be immaterial to them. Yeah, you're cashing a bigger check. Congratulations. You're losing more games. You're not relevant. I went and did a story at Nebraska not long after they, I might still even have been at ESPN, I think. Yeah, not long after they left the Big 12 to go there. And basically what it boiled down to was Nebraska likes things the same so much that when it became betrothed basically to Texas and what Texas wanted, and that ruined all of their everything. You know, they were no longer playing Oklahoma every year. They just, everything that they'd been the way it always was changed when they ended up in this different conference and Texas is calling the shots. And they're like, fine, if that's not going to be the same, then we're blowing up everything and just leaving and going over here so we can get away from Texas and try to rebuild our thing. And they just haven't been able to rebuild it.
A funny thing is, if they are the team and not West Virginia.
Yeah.
Like, because there's a spot in the Big 12, and the Big 12 would rather have Nebraska than West Virginia. And West Virginia would certainly rather be in the Big 10 than, you know, but man, they're just in a better. Now, all right, how about this for on Nebraska, though? This is on Nebraska. And I thought this was very interesting. Scott Frost, obviously a very good coach, did a great job at Central Florida. And that's the thing. Like, if he can't win there, yikes. You know, who's going to do it? Well, they have fans. They own the state. It ain't even close. Quarterback in Nebraska is the biggest thing in the state.
Yep.
By Warren Buffett.
Yeah, that's about it.
That's it. And he's old. So they open what they're setting up something called the Ready Now program that will offer, as the name, image, and likeness comes and changes recruiting. I do think this is Nebraska's maybe way out. They're going to offer every Nebraska student athlete evaluation of their brand and review how to basically make money on this whole thing. And they're being, Frost is very aggressive in this and vocal about it and setting up how you come to Nebraska now and we might be able to monetize you and monetize all these fans that are sitting around filling the stadium in a way you won't get if you go to another school, because it is a big pond and you can be the big fish. You know, and that to me will be very interesting. We always talk. I always use the example of Boise State being able to out recruit most of the Pac-12. So you're a much bigger deal if you're the star of Boise State, and Boise, Idaho's got plenty of people enough to pay you. Nebraska does too. And I'm wondering if that will really help the Nebraska program or how it factors into a lot of these schools that Iowa's got a lot of fans too, but doesn't have a recruiting base. Does that almost return those old ways where they could go pluck kids out of the South? You know, that's when Tom Osborne was rolling, when he was using his linemen from the Midwest and his skill players were coming from the South, especially in Florida. He had that pipeline going. Could that help out going forward? That ain't going to help you this year. Ain't going to help you for X number of years, but is that something?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great, you know, that's exactly what, look, let's find an advantage. Let's find a niche. And that's what that could be. Is something to differentiate themselves from recruits who, you know, didn't grow up thinking Nebraska was this great program. So I think it is an interesting concept, an interesting idea, and you got to find something to sell. Maybe that's what they can sell and get ahead of that curve, because, that curve will be real, I think. I mean, that's going to be significant how schools deal with that and what sort of, you know, offers and incentives are available to players when they start looking at name, image, and likeness situations.
Yeah, well, you know, it almost seems like for 15 years now, we've been saying, well, Nebraska has a fan base. You know, it's like all that they're left propped up on. And so if that fan base can in turn, you know, be monetized, if you will, by helping their players with name, image, and likeness, I do think it can come back. But I just don't know if, like, Nebraska and the sea of red are going to be a difference maker, and you're going to beat SEC schools for players. You know what I mean? You can certainly go back into Texas and get some guys. Like you can outduel those old Big 12 schools you used to play patty cake with. But like, I don't know if that's going to give them a foothold in Chicago, which they've really failed to establish recruiting wise. And if you're in that quadrant, like, and you're in the Big 10, you need to have some resonance there. So I do still think, I agree with Dan, it's an identity thing with Nebraska, and let's face it, no recruits right now have been alive when Nebraska has been relevant.
Yeah, no, it's a great place to go visit, but you're dry, like, you, it's, well, what is great game day experience? And it is, it's phenomenal. But to get there, if you're a player in the areas of the Midwest that matter, like if you're in Chicago, you get drive by Wisconsin, and it's closer to drive to Wisconsin than Iowa, and they got great, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're in Indiana, those schools, Notre Dame, it's closer to go to. There's a lot of big stadiums with tons of fans. So I think Nebraska is really a key to how much better this league can get. I think Iowa kind of maxes out what it generally does.
Sure.
Minnesota certainly on the rise, and we'll see. PJ Fleck, can he exceed what I think the rest of us would think is a cap? Northwestern does kind of what Northwestern can do. The other schools are there, Purdue, Illinois, a lot of can go up. But until someone can catch Ohio State, I'm not really sure is this the kind of the holding pattern of the league? Cause
right.
We can bag on Michigan, but they're not bad. They're not what they, no, I mean, they were losing to Toledo a few years ago. They're a good team. Right.
No, they're good. They're going to win 9, sometimes 10.
Penn State's, I think, very good. They're good. Yeah. It's a good program. Yeah, and they're always going to have that problem of one of the three to four best teams in the area is Notre Dame, and they don't got them. That doesn't help.
This is Penn State's chance. I think Ohio State's better than they are, but I think this is the best team James Franklin has had at Penn State, and they get Ohio State at home. I think it's a tough stretch of the schedule. I mean, Pete, you were talking about Nebraska's, but Penn State's schedule, October 3rd at Michigan, October 17th, Iowa, October 24th, Ohio State. That's three tough games in a row. And are you going to be ready for that third one? But you do get them at home. There's a lot to like about their team. I think quarterback play was better than I thought it would be with Sean Clifford, but it probably still needs another step up. But they've got players, big game, big playmakers and game breakers on both sides of the ball. So if they can't get Ohio State this year, I don't know when they're going to get them. And I still don't think they'll get them.
I would tend to agree. I think, like, you know, betting against Ohio State at this point is like betting against Oklahoma in the Big 12. There's just they've separated themselves on the recruiting trail. Ryan Day has quickly established himself as one of the five best, you know, quarterback development guys in college football. And I mean, to think that Jim Harbaugh has just been completely surpassed in the area of quarterback development in his own league. Obviously, early in Harbaugh's time there, they had Jake Rudock, who he turned from a completely pedestrian quarterback to a late round draft pick. But other than that, not only have they failed to recruit a competent quarterback who could help them, you know, win a league title, they've also failed to develop anyone. And so, I mean, what gives me the most hesitancy about Michigan right now is that they looked at all these quarterbacks last year and they were not better than Shea Patterson. So I really think when you're looking at that East below Ohio State, I do think Penn State is the best foil on paper in the East. And I just think Michigan had four offensive linemen drafted. They had good skill. They had a skill guy they didn't use get drafted by the Browns in the sixth round, and then another one who was at Texas this year. So, and they return Nico Collins, who's one of the better, should be one of the better receivers in the country. It's just they've been out of sync on that side of the ball pretty much Harbaugh's entire tenure there, and I don't see maybe year two under Josh Gattis they do get in sync a little bit more, but I don't. It'd be foolish to just bet on that at this point because the returns have just been not disappointing.
Jim Harbaugh not getting the great quarterback is a mystery of college football. Now, he comes back from the pros. And you could say, look, Michigan's never going to be better than Ohio State, or they're never going to be a national true title contender anymore. That's fine. But if the one thing I thought he'd be able to do is line up quarterbacks, this is the guy who took Andrew Luck to a Heisman and made Stanford matter. He coached, took Colin Kaepernick to the Super Bowl. He played 15 years as a quarterback in the NFL, and not as just this gifted player, but captain comeback, the warrior for all these teams. This is Tom Brady's alma mater, and Brady is back shooting videos for him, throwing game balls pregame, doing speeches at the, you know, he's all in. And they can't get that guy, that great quarterback prospect. Like, I would have been, you could have sat there and said, hey, they're going to go 9-3 most years, but they're going to have a great quarterbacks. I would have bought that. He's gotten linemen, offensive linemen, defensive linemen. He's got skill players. He's got everything up there except the quarterback. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to go play for Jim Harbaugh? I don't get the disconnect there. And to me, that's the thing that's missing. Now, can they get that guy? And it all flips. Oh, maybe, but that's one of the all time. I don't know. It's like USC not having great quarterbacks.
Yeah,
it's like, but no, you have to.
Yeah, 6 years in, and yes, they got Rudock. A transfer bounce. They kind of, I thought, made something out of not much with Wilton Spate for one season, and then the next season he wasn't as good, and from then it's just been spin cycle, and. It is really surprising, and I don't know, that goes back to lack of offensive identity. Nobody knew for sure what Michigan was. They were pro style when pro style wasn't very popular. Then they were tried to make a hybrid pro style spread, and they just haven't been able to, I think, to come up with a marketable offensive style that to sell to a quarterback. That's as near as a guess as I can come up with. But it is very surprising to see Jim Harbaugh year six. We still don't know whether they got anybody at that position.
Other school. Interesting is Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin, they got Coach Sweatshirt, Paul Christ, my favorites. Swears that sweatshirt 24 hours a day, even in the shower. He's currently swimming in Green Bay on his vacation, wearing the sweatshirt at the beach.
Wearing the sweatshirt.
Out on Lake Michigan. Or
do we think Chris has one of those new mac and cheese dispensers that went viral this week in his house already?
I hope so. If not, it is on order on the Amazon.
Be a great late night infomercial. Chris pitching the mac and cheese dispenser.
If Paul Chris pitches a mac and cheese dispenser on cable, I am buying it.
I'm buying it in a heartbeat.
Be like, this man knows what he's talking about.
That anyway. Commercial would absolutely be bereft of any sizzle, but I would still buy it. Paul Chris talking about that'd be the fun part. Yeah.
Like legendary. It'd be the new era Coach O Hummer commercial.
Yeah. Like when Kiffin did that ad and he looked hungover. Yes. Like monotoned it for like, come to our games. It's going to be real exciting. It's like, dude.
Yeah.
We do film this a few hours from now. I need a nap in the office. Allegedly hungover. He just looked hungover. I'm not saying he was hungover because I know.
I mean,
Lane.
Chances aren't. You know, it's not like the craziest assumption you've ever made.
So. Anyway, how far can he take Wisconsin? I'm just looking this year. I mean, I like everything that's got set up. They have to go to Michigan late September, and they get Notre Dame at this Lambeau game. Allegedly, although that may get moved to Notre Dame. Of course, none of this stuff could happen, but they were pretending it. Let's not ruin a good midsummer podcast. But in league, they got to go to Michigan. They get Minnesota at home, and that's
avoid
it.
Ohio State.
They get avoid Ohio State. They avoid Penn State. They get Nebraska at home. They got to go to Iowa.
Got Notre Dame at Lambeau, and we're going to do a pod from there in the parking lot.
Yeah, we're going to, but we don't know if that'll happen. That'll probably be at Notre Dame Stadium. But let's just take a look at the league. You know, man, this is setting up kind of nice for them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it the schedule does set up for him. I don't think this is anywhere near as good a team as their team was last year, but schedule means a lot. Crossover teams games mean a lot, and just kind of when you catch people and where. They should probably win the division. I think Minnesota might be better than them this year, but they get Minnesota in Madison and a lot of other nice schedule setups. So
I think the interesting thing there, like Jack Cohn is one of on the long line of pedestrian game manager, completely unremarkable and unexciting quarterbacks that they've had. You can go back to Brooks Bollinger and pretty much non-Russell Wilson fill in the blanks with the rest of the Wisconsin quarterbacks. They do have an exciting quarterback prospect on the roster, a kid named Graham Mertz, who's from the Wichita area, I believe, who kind of turned down all the big boys just to go to Wisconsin. And I think the fundamental tension of how high Wisconsin can go this season will be when Christ goes to him. Because you know he won't be the opening day starter. This is Wisconsin. Hold your horses, all right? So when Christ sort of decides to take the reins off him and open things up a little bit, they do not have much skill that on the outside. That would be my concern. They certainly have running backs. You know, if you're a running back, you don't go to Wisconsin. You're stupid. So they have plenty of talent there. What they don't have is as much skill as they've had the past few years on the outside, which may be more the reason to get a more competent thrower in there.
Let's do win totals. We know gambling is not always legal everywhere. It is legal in New Jersey, though. And you can use our gambling partner, BetMGM. Consider that. How about that plug? Rutgers, 2.5 is the over-under. Now, they start with Monmouth. They play the Monmouth Hawks in the season opener. I mean, that's the kind of thing that gets you fired up and hoping that college football can defeat the COVID. Rutgers versus Monmouth.
Shiano's back to take on the Hawks.
Imagine Monmouth going to that game and catching Corona on that.
Oh, there will be no fans at Rutgers.
I am not going to risk. Social distancing will not be a real difficulty at the Rutgers-Monmouth game. But anyway, other than Monmouth, I don't know if they got a win. I think this 2.5 is inflated on Shiano. I think it's an under. I'm taking the under. Who the hell else they beaten? Temple? At Temple? Illinois? I don't think so. There's always the Maryland game.
Yeah, they got trouble. I even with a coaching upgrade, I think I would be tempted to go under and say they win 2. And not 3.
I will give Shiano credit for this. They have 10 transfers who have come in, so they've given themselves some immediate thing. Like, they took the fast guy who returned the kick in the Rose Bowl from Wisconsin. They've got a defensive back.
It's the best description of a Wisconsin player. Wisconsin's one fast guy.
Yeah. It's like Crookshank or something like that.
Every single guy, every Wisconsin man's like, oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, our one guy.
Yeah, they took our fast guy.
The fast guy, yeah.
The fast guy.
Yeah, they took the kid who was the defensive MVP of the Rose Bowl for Ohio State 2 years ago, who kind of got squeezed out in the scheme change when Halfley came in. I think it's Brendan White. Like, they got some, like, real guys, a rotation lineman from Minnesota, whatever. So I do think they will be better. They got Noah Vedral, the backup quarterback from Nebraska, who'd been down at UCF with Frost. They also have the
That's enough.
Number 14 recruiting class in the country. But yeah, 3's a long way to go. I'll give you that. 3's a long way to go. I'm just trying to actually point out some football things. I always get yelled at for that. So,
well, you can do it for the good teams. Okay. I don't think we got it. Save it. I'm all for it. If you know, with Rutgers, the fast guy at Wisconsin, though, everyone knows that. It's like the white. It's like the white Laker. It's like the one white guy on the Lakers. They always have one guy, and he's very, very well known. I don't know. All right. Maryland is getting, what do they got? 3.5.
3.5.
Favored. 3.5. They open with Towson. Another one to really get it cranking early.
Maryland over under. This year looks a lot like last year did, where they're going to start pretty fast, win a couple games, and then reality's going to smack them in the eye. I can see 3 wins. I cannot see a 4th win. So, no, I'm taking the under.
Michigan State, 4.5, new coach, no spring practice. Non-conference victories that could happen. They're at BYU. They get the Toledo Rockets, and then the Miami Hurricanes are coming to East Lansing. How about that?
Dan, you may have to go to a game.
Well, let's not get carried away.
Yeah, all right. Sorry about that. I love the under on this. I love the under on this. They have no quarterback. Mel Tucker got there late, no spring practice, lost a bunch of talent on defense, recruiting had atrophied there. The program was flat, stale, and scandalous. I don't see 5 wins there.
I'm pretty sure they don't have a quarterback who has thrown a college touchdown. So that's not a great place to start. And yeah, as Pete said, the recruiting had started to tail off, and they are filling
a lot of holes with a completely new staff. I'm fine with the under on that one, too.
All right. Illinois and Purdue are both 5 wins. They could be a potential, like my UMass UConn United meetup, New England United. What if Purdue and Illinois met up and Cornfield United? They could be a pretty good program.
Cornfield United. I love it.
The road between West Lafayette and Champaign is a tough one.
It is. I've been there. And yeah, like Normal, they can meet up in Normal, Illinois or something there, whatever they might be in Crawfordsville, Indiana. And
is either of them getting more than 5 wins?
Yes. Yes. I've got Purdue with 6, maybe more. They had everybody injured last year. They're recruiting well. They got a transfer quarterback. I think they've got a chance to at least get to 6, although the schedule's not easy. They're playing Memphis and Air Force non-conference. Those are not easy games for them. But and then Illinois, yeah, Illinois starts Illinois State, UConn, Bowling Green at home. They're 3-0 there. They go at Rutgers. They should be 4-0 to start. Certainly they can scrape around and find 2 more wins somewhere. I'm taking the over with them, too.
I would love to see the 4-0 start to the under. That would be peak Lovey right there. Peak Lovey.
That might get Lovey fired, too.
Yeah. Purdue does not have a proven quarterback, which is a little bit scary and almost too bad. Like, why wouldn't a quarterback want to go to Purdue and play for Jeff Brohm? I mean, he's great offensive acumen, threw the ball around like crazy at Western Kentucky. Purdue has some of the best skill of any program in the Big Ten. I still have faith in Brohm. I think they'll figure it out. They've recruited better. That side of the ball is going to be better now that the immortal Bob Diaco is the defensive coordinator in West Lafayette. So I think Purdue figures out a way to get to 6, and I think Illinois does the 4-0 freeze out.
I think Pat has to say something nice about Jeff Brohm or he gets thrown out of Louisville. They won't serve him a hot brown sandwich ever again.
He's the fourth Brohm brother.
Yeah,
I am. He really is. Got to take care of my brethren.
I think we were calling him Cooper Braun for a while,
yeah,
right?
Cooper Braun, yes.
Cooper Braun. Yeah, Pat. So I shouldn't even ask. Pat's like, yeah, they're going to contend. He's giving out the injury excuse.
Come on, man.
He had everything.
Come on.
All right. Northwestern, 5.5 wins. Nobody. Well, that's every year. That's their over-under for the last 100 years.
They get Peyton Ramsey, the transfer quarterback from Indiana, who's a pretty good player, and do they need a quarterback. Holy moly, were they awful last year at quarterback. And they get a new offensive coordinator because they finally changed the staff. So on those two things alone, I am tempted to go over. What's the number? Is 5.5? Let's look at the schedule. At Michigan State, I'm going to say win. Tulane, win. Central Michigan, win. That's 3. You can beat Nebraska at home, get to 4. You can beat Maryland, you can get to 5. You got Morgan State. Oh, for sure. I'm taking the over.
Yeah, I think they'll get there. They'll get there, too. It'd be hard to see them being as impotent on offense as they were the year before. And you got to remember that new facility has been up there. They've recruited at a much higher uptick in the past 2 years than they have in the past. So I do think there's some young talent in that program. I think you're getting another influx of it this year. This is really the first class that they could recruit that facility to. I think they'll figure it out. I mean, that West is just like a big bunch of programs doing the doggy paddle around each other. So you're gonna pick up a couple wins there. And I think they could go to Michigan State, really make a statement to start the year and show what a long road Mel Tucker has to bring that thing back to where Mark D'Antonio had it 5 years ago.
Northwestern's football facility is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
It actually, as much as I overvalue college football, even I am like, look at this prime spot of Lake Michigan real estate. And they're using it for this football facility. Even I am taken aback.
I mean, it's like a museum. Have you been in it, Dan?
No, they don't. Yeah,
it's jaw dropping. Like, I mean, it's like I've been to every facility. Here's one of like the dirty little secrets of being a college sports writer for as long as Pat and I have done it. And Dan, I'm sure you're the same way. When I go somewhere and some coach is like, do you want to see our weight room? I'm like, God, I do not want to see your weight room. Looks like every other weight room some coach has been excited to show me over the years. I would rather poke my eyes with sharp pencils than go see your weight room. Sure, coach. Love to.
Yeah.
The exception tour. Is Northwestern. It is a cathedral. It is immaculate. You can argue like whether it was worth the investment, the money, the real estate, whatever, but it is a pristine place, man.
Well, if you're going to use that real estate, you might as well make it nice. It is pretty awesome. I have not seen the inside, but I've seen enough facilities. It's like, yeah, great. Yep. Yep. Oh, we got the Monogram logo in the meeting room chairs.
I mean, what do the coaches say to you guys when they get you to the weight room? You're like, yep, it's bigger than most. Look at the bench rack there.
Like, you just look around and say, wow, it's really nice. Yeah, that's awesome.
Really, yeah. Look at
how so are the other 57 I have seen, but yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, Nebraska is
6.5.
Their non-conference is, we already talked about them. I got South Dakota State, Jackrabbits, Central Michigan. What do you got? 6.5, over or under?
Under.
Under.
Yeah.
This is that dangerous point where I feel like I'm agreeing with Pat too much. I always try to be conscious of that. He's trying to drag me into the betting gutter with him.
I mean, I see 5. It's a problem with these. Vegas, they look at the schedule also.
They do.
They study these things. That's why the over-under is very close. This is a big year for Scott Frost to prove he can do something. I don't know. All right, Indiana, 7.5. How about Indiana being a football school practically?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Illinois. Indiana, 7.5. Thoughts?
Should be, like, really good off the out of the gate. I mean, they're going to lose to Wisconsin in Madison, but then 1, 2, 3. I could see 5. I could see them 5-1. Going into the second half of the schedule and playing more of the Eastern Division.
6. Michigan State.
Yeah, visiting? Michigan State. There, yeah. 6-1. 6-1. 2, 3.
Got 2 more in you. Purdue and Illinois. They're not beating Penn State, Ohio State, or Michigan. That's and Wisconsin. No. So that's just,
yep. You know what? I'm still so appalled at Tom Allen's management of the end of the bowl game against Tennessee that I'm taking the under.
There's no grudge like a Pat 40 bowl coaching malfunction.
That's it.
Budge.
That's
grudge.
It.
There's nothing. There nothing lasts longer. Like
complete. Sully, am I right? Were they ready for the onside kick that everybody knew was coming? No.
Yep. That was just about as bad as it gets.
Some people feel like that strong about Middle East issues. Pat feels that strongly about Indiana clock management. I'm taking the under. I think quarterback change is going to hurt them. I give Tom Allen a lot of credit, but I really think that Indiana leapt up after the hiring of Kalen DeBoer as the offensive coordinator. He's now the head coach at Fresno, and I do think he was a big part of the magic there, and I think that's going to be difficult to replace.
Iowa is at 7 wins. I skipped Iowa. 7 wins for Iowa. They got all sorts of tumult in the program, but they have a kind of favorable schedule. Again, another early one. Northern, NIU, Michigan State early, but they are at Ohio State, at Penn State. That doesn't help. That's gonna be that's the kind that gives you a beating in the middle, and then also Northwestern shows up, and that's kind of can you survive that run? So Iowa at 7, they usually do pretty well. But what do you got?
I think they hit like 7 on the dot. I would not really touch this one. If I had to say, I'd probably say over, because you can usually count on Iowa to win 8 games like every single year. But I think I look at the schedule and I see 7. So I say push.
I'm going to take the over. I think that there's enough coming back on their offensive line and there's enough identity there that I think this is going to be exactly what we expect from Iowa. I just think they are better than the rest of the teams in the West and can squeeze a few victories out of there. So like they can go to Purdue and win. They can still push people around in that West, and their identity's strong. And obviously how the program reacts to the firing of the strength coach and the tumult they went through in the offseason is going to be a big question. But I don't see them having difficulty getting past 7 games. Plus, I disagree with Pat at some point. I mean, God.
I like them. I think they're stronger than Iowa State. And I'm not just – this is the next team, but we'll go right to Minnesota. I'm not just conceding Minnesota's got this juice. They had a great season, and they've got a lot of momentum, but I'm not willing to just write those guys off. So Minnesota, I would take Iowa over. Minnesota is 9 wins. Their non-con is Florida Atlantic, Tennessee Tech, and BYU. All 3 at home. So that helps. They avoid, they play Michigan at home. They avoid Ohio State and Penn State. 9 wins for row the boat.
Yeah, I'm going over. I'm taking the over there. I like them. Like the program arc. They have had some coaching turnover, which happens a little bit when you when you're winning like they have. You're going to lose some guys, but Tanner Morgan's back for, I think, his 103rd year at quarterback. Even though he's only a junior, he still has been there 103 years. Rashad Bateman, best receiver in the league, outstanding, one of the best receivers in the country. Offensive line, back most of it back together. They're going to have guys that can run the ball. They'll be okay. Schedule, I think getting Iowa at home is good. You get Northwestern at home. You get Michigan at home. I think they can win. They can beat Michigan possibly on October 17th. I'm taking the over. Row the boat.
Well, I think you guys know, and listeners of our podcast would know, I've been rowing the boat early on, so I'm not going to stop rowing it. I'm not going to stop rowing it now. I agree with all of Pat's offensive analysis. I do think that offensive line there, they bring a lot of guys back and have a couple NFL caliber guys there. There's some cohesion there. They do go from Kirk Soraka as the OC to Mike Sanford as the OC. The rest of the offensive staff does remain intact. I think the offensive identity remains intact. I think Rashad Bateman could be the first receiver picked in the NFL draft this year. He's certainly in the conversation. I think he ends up being at least a first round pick. There, look, like wherever PJ Fleck has gone, talent has followed, and recruiting is such an emphasis there that you're going to start to have elite players. And the culture is strong. Like if you watch that Auburn game, I mean, Auburn clearly had better players. They just played harder than them. And so I really think that like, that only gets stronger as the years go on there at Minnesota. So I think they beat the nine and the boat keeps rowing. And we see if PJ ends up going to USC.
Well, look, you got nine wins and you're looking at a 12 game schedule and you got one that you would rack up as a sure loss at Wisconsin. That's pretty good. I think the Iowa game will deter you. We'll know a ton based on that Friday, September 18th game with Iowa at home. I'm not willing to just give up on Iowa, but if Minnesota handles them, they could be in for a huge season because like they got to go to Wisconsin, but who knows what Michigan is, and that's it. I mean, the rest of you're at Nebraska at the end. That's about it. So could be big. I would take the over on that, although I want to watch that Iowa game. All right, Michigan's a nine win, same number. Schedule is tougher. Obviously, you have Wisconsin coming in, you have Penn State coming in, both at home. At Washington is the big non conference game, and then you're at Ohio State at the end of the year. There's certainly three losses you could see out of that, but you could also see them at swing games, either Wisconsin or Penn State, probably. I don't see them beating Ohio State.
Well, I think we learn a ton about them at Washington to open the season. Those are going to be two unproven quarterbacks starting in that game. Washington has the Sac State transfer, who may have an edge there. And then obviously Michigan has a undistinguished cast that Dylan McCaffrey's probably going to emerge from. So I would say that. You know, I think nine is right on the dot. I can't with conviction say they'll be over that, but I also don't think, considering just how mediocre the rest of the Big Ten is, like I don't see them losing to Indiana, Rutgers, Maryland, Purdue, or Michigan State. So I think they end up at nine.
Yeah, I think nine's a good number. I think there's five games I'm looking at Washington, Wisconsin, Penn State, at Minnesota, and at Ohio State. So there's five losable games. Can they win two out of those and lose three and be 9-3? Yeah, I would say they can probably do that. I don't know whether they can get to 10, but I don't think they'd be at 8 either. So I'm saying 9.
I would not bet over. I'd probably either bet to skip it or bet under.
Yeah,
I don't like that one. Like I like Minnesota going over. All right, Wisconsin 9.5. Kind of run through their schedule in various ways, but they got Michigan at home. They got Notre Dame. They got Minnesota at home. They're at Iowa. They got Nebraska at home. Northwestern's at Wrigley. Notre Dame will be probably at Notre Dame. There are other non-cons, Southern Illinois and Appalachian State. 9.5 looks pretty nice to me on this. I'd take the over.
I'm thinking they can win 10, but I don't know. I think the opener against Indiana, watch out for that one. That they're at home, they should win it, but Indiana's going to bring a pretty good team in there. Wisconsin better be ready to play right away. Michigan, Notre Dame, Minnesota. You know what? No, I'm going to 9.5. I'm taking the under. Changed my mind.
I wanted to disagree with you. definitely taking the under here. I mean, they lost to Illinois last year. Like, and they, you know, they lose Jonathan Taylor. They have uncertainty at quarterback. They have mediocre skill. They're the classic Wisconsin team on paper, susceptible to losing a game they should win. All right. App State may be better than some of those low end Big Ten teams. So like, don't write that off as a sure win. I think they can futz around and figure out a way to lose three or four.
All right. Penn State is 9.5. They get they are at Virginia Tech is their big non-conference. Otherwise, you got Kent State and San Jose State showing up to get pounded. They are at Michigan. They get Ohio State at home. They are at Nebraska. 9.5 for the Nittany Lions. I'm sorry, too many teams here.
Over. I think they are the best team to not win the conference in the country this year. That they are going to be 11-1. They'll lose to Ohio State. They're going to be very good, and they may make the playoff. We'll see whether that's good enough to do it. But I like them. I like them to win 11 regular season.
God, do I hate agreeing with Pat so much? Just bet the opposite of us. Just start loading up on the opposite of us. But I just feel like, yeah, is there? You can pick two losses out on this schedule. I don't think you can pick three losses out on this schedule. So you could they could lose at Michigan. They could lose at home to Ohio State, although that's not guaranteed. They beat them there 4 or 5 years ago, and then I was at the game two years ago where they had Ohio State dead to rights the entire game when Dwayne Haskins was a quarterback and kind of came back from the dead. Yeah, I just don't see them being particularly threatened by anyone else in the East. And look, Virginia Tech still got to prove a lot to me, you know, on the defensive side of the ball with Bud Foster gone, Justin Hamilton taken over there. I'm just not I'm not ready to be completely worried about that game yet as a loss for them. So, no, I think that's pretty safe putting Penn State in double digits.
Yeah, I agree. I could see 11 or 12. I mean, I'm not that Ohio State game is going to be a game. And yeah, at Michigan's the only other one that scares me. And who knows? The other thing we should have brought this up earlier, but you know, I mean, we don't know if any of these games are going to get played. But
no.
You're not going to get Ohio State in 100, you know, white out Saturday night, 110,000. But you also don't have to play at Michigan or some of these other play. You know, Virginia Tech can be a dangerous game, but if the place is empty,
yeah,
it's got right? You know 18,000 people rattling around. Blacksburg, it's not the same as going in normally in Lane Stadium and dealing with that. So certainly a factor, plus or minus, because that Ohio State Penn State game on October 24th was going to be one of the great environments you could possibly get, as it always is at Penn State. Yeah. So
sure hope we have it.
Yeah, so sure I'm glad do. I brought that up at the very end. That
home field advantage may not matter.
Yeah, but I'd have to leave now to get to State College to get there in time for kick on October 24th. But there's risk because the game could be canceled. So, yeah, that is the
Buckeyes,
hardest place to get to.
Buckeyes are 11, so they're basically you got to win them all. They're at Penn State. They're at Oregon. There has been some decree that Oregon won't have any fans. I believe the state of Oregon said no fans in attendance until through some point in September. I don't know if that'll switch up, or maybe I may have bad info or that's changed. They get Michigan at home, then they get Nebraska at home. Not really seeing a whole lot else to worry about. It's really about, do they win the Penn State game?
The only time I want to bet an over on a team when it's 11 is when it's Clemson in the ACC, because you know they're going to win them all. But I think Ohio State will win them all. I just wouldn't bet it. I don't think I would bet it. But if you make me, if you answer me, ask me, are they going to win 12? They're going to 11. I'd say they're going to win 12, but I just wouldn't put any money on it.
We shouldn't underestimate Bowling Green showing up ornery because Pat has relegated them in the opener. So, like, let's just not chalk up the
bulletin
win there.
Board material right there, baby. Kicked out of the FBS.
The Oregon game, and Dan, it was a good point that we probably should have brought up earlier. Fans, no fans, but I think Oregon with the new starter at quarterback is going to there's going to be a learning curve there that day for them. And so, yeah, if I have to pick over or under, I'm definitely picking the over on the 11. You know, Michigan at home obviously is, you know, if fans are a thing and everything, is obviously going to be a big swing. So,
but it might not be, though. That's the thing. I would bet the over if I had to bet it, but like betting over 11 just doesn't even seem fun. Like, you just,
yeah,
like you need the, I mean, it's like you got to win them all. So you get better off just waiting for the Penn State game and then betting that when you have a better idea. I mean, it's just, I don't know. So anyway, all right, that's our Big Ten preview, though. If you're still with us, happy 4th of July weekend, or we're listening the rest of the summer. We hope all these games actually take place. It's kind of fun just talking about football games. I'm very, very excited for some of them. And boy, it would be great if they were all filled stadiums, but I don't know. Unlikely. Anyway.
Save us Jonas Salk.
Yeah, somebody. Somebody. Give us. I want to watch Penn State host the Buckeyes. All right. Subscribe. Leave nice social media messages. Tell your friends. Tell your mom. Tell whoever. We need all the listeners we can get. We will talk to you guys soon here on the Yahoo Sports College Podcast.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering D.C. scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.